helped what Glenn said. That was great. You know, I had heard the stories read out like that, and that was really lovely. I do love all the memorable relationships and things. They really bring in humanity, and particularly in love in marriage or conjugal love. You know, the bad news is, the two chapters that we didn't read after that, I just checked them while we were doing the other reading. And the bad news is the next two heavens, and it's almost strange that they're called heavens, are, you know, the next one's like more like concubinage and polygamy type stuff. Then the last one, where it says about marriage, he calls it marriage is since those times. Because we stopped at copper, didn't we? You know? Then we had iron. And then we've been marriage since those times. And that's so bad that they just think of marriage as sex, and they call wives prostitutes, and then they're in darkness and don't realize that they think it's full day and all that. And at the end, they're getting ready because Swedenborg and the angel challenge them. They're only thinking from lusts. They actually get annoyed, want to attack them, and the angel's got to sort of go, stop, you know. You see Johnny, oh, sorry. Anyway, he stops them all. And it says at the very end, the angel says to Swedenborg, people are still coming here daily from the world. And then if it gets too full and stuff, people are going into chasms and down into deeper places. So it seems paradoxical that it's happening, but I'm not going to worry about that for the moment. What's that?
No. Tomorrow.
Yeah, just one tomorrow. But, hey, tomorrow, mate, you've got yours. Devils. Yeah, because look, I don't usually present about this in this walk, because I usually present a positive spin on what Jenny and I are working with, you know, because we've spent 25 years teaching people therapy, and we both work in drug and alcohol together, we both work in mental health together, which is lovely, and then we both ended up working in Relationships Australia and all the rest together, on and off, and which has been good. Doesn't mean we always get on well. That's marriage, isn't it? I love Swedenborg says about that, that marriage can be really rough on the surface, but like that doesn't tell you what the floor of the ocean is like, where it's and that your two argumentative marriages might look the same, but when you go below where the depth is. And we've written about that a lot. It's also nice that we've been able, as well as to teach therapy with people, the ministry work I've done has been to bring therapists together to support them in their own spiritual path, whatever it might be, so that it's not overshadowed by a particular religious set of ways of being in the world that puts most people off, unfortunately. And we've done a couple of book chapters together now. I've done an edited book of a whole lot of writers, and we've done about 10 book chapters in total and a lot of articles. And every time we do that, Swedenborg gets mentioned, which I love. I've found to be a lot more discreet about mentioning Swedenborg to psychotherapists and psychologists and social workers.
I don't think he would be offended.
No, I don't think he would be offended. It's to try and meet people where they're at.
Exactly.
And for Gestalt therapy is to be authentic. It means to be both spontaneous but in response to the other, like a dance. So I just be spontaneous, which is what I did in the original 20 odd years ago. I said my friend's spiritual diary and journal dreams and stuff. They'd go, whoa, this is heavy. Brian, where have you gone? So I stopped doing it. But the people who trained with us for 25 years all said they came to us, and they came from all over Australia. One even came from Japan for her last year of finish. Said they came there because of the spiritual quality of what we offer. And we only did one weekend on spirituality, but they could feel the spirituality in the course. I think a lot of people, particularly therapists and psychologists and social workers, want spirituality. But the form that it comes in is an older form where they feel almost straight away they've been dominated and abused by spirituality in the forms that it's come to them. And that's why they seek other, like Eastern-based spiritualities and yogas and meditations, because there's a more gentleness for them. The reason I'm saying all that is because Jay and I are still in the same field. In fact, I drop her to work every morning. Apart from Friday, work she stays at home and I go to work. We both work now full time in a field that's called the family relationship field or family relationship services. It's funded by Attorney General's Department and FACSIA to a whole heap of organizations around the country under family law to deal with. Originally, it was about the last 60 years, it was around marriage guidance, couples therapy, family therapy, and helping families stay together. But since 2006, it's been funded to deal with the change in the Family Law Act. And they closed down the court counseling that we had, and they made it that now people would instead go to services in the community, not in the court. And instead of being government-funded services, these services are now to help people through separation. There's still some money, early intervention money we now call it. Still do couples therapy and try and help couples stay together, help families stay together. But the vast amount of money now has gone, over $400 million a year, roughly, has gone to family relationship centers where Jenny works, where there are mediators who try and get the separating couple. They have to go there before they can go to court. Jenny has to sign a legal release that they've been there if they want to go to court, otherwise they can't go to court. And what Jenny does with them and the other people she works with is we work with the two separating parents to get an agreement, what's called a parenting plan, which trumps the court. None of the parent, the whole law now is if the parents agree, that's worth gold compared to a court or a magistrate saying you must let your kids go there once a week. And if the people have that from the magistrate and they step out of court and they go, how about you and I seeing them twice a week, that trumps what the magistrate does, which is really it's really giving it back to parents. And also taking it out of what they saw the last 20 years has been a very adversarial system where each lawyer will go, and you still see it up here, I'll fight for you. Mm-hmm. And so the lawyers, you know how much it costs to go through? It's about $100,000 to go through separation if you have to go to court. If you don't and you just do it yourself and work it out, it costs you nothing. Most people choose to go to court and lose the money. Now, there's 65 of those family relationship centers around the country. They cost $1 to $2 million each. And they're full of people like Jenny mediating couples to try and help them come up with parenting plans. And we have what's called child inclusive practitioners. And their job is not to see the parents, but to see the children. And try and find out what the children want. And the mediator can use that in talking with the parents to say, look, these children are suffering and you need to do it this way. Of course, you have to give that to parents in a way that doesn't shame them. Otherwise, the parents will just react and feel shamed and hurt again and pull back for them. There are also more intensive programs. I set one up in New South Wales. There's 20 of them around the country called Parenting Order Programs. These programs is when the mediation and the court doesn't work. They go to a Parenting Order Program, and it has people who work with people for about 2 years, with individual couples, working with the parents, working with them separately, working with the kids, running groups for the kids, groups like Home to Home, which helps them understand and share with other kids what it's like to be in one home and in another. That now has become the norm, believe it or not. In fact, when we had Hugh Mackay talk to us a couple of years ago to celebrate 60 years of Relationships Australia, Hugh Mackay said, and he's one of those social commentators, you know, stats. He says, if you come from a family nowadays where it's the same mother and father and the same kids, then you're in a minority. The normal family nowadays is a blended family, where there's one or two parents, or a single mother, parents usually, or people who are now remarrying or just living together with kids from both families. That's the norm today in Australia, possibly in most Western countries. So these centres that we're working in are working to try and it's not trying to keep them together anymore, because too late for that. One in two marriages are ended up in divorce after about 8 years, I think is the statistic, and more when it's a second marriage. Therapeutic is because whatever they haven't fixed in the first marriage is going to rumble around in the second marriage, plus it'll have the other partners getting in the way. You know, the stress of all the kids going, I don't like my new parent. And you have the stress of the new parent going, I don't really love these kids as much, they're not my kids. I feel ashamed about that, but how do I work with that? So they have to work with all those issues. The statistics that also impact on this, I'm painting the bad picture first because it's a really good picture, is that from a nice, a really big piece of research data of what caused mental health problems in Australia, shows that it's about 15% of people married have got a diagnosable mental health problem, whether it's anxiety, depression, or something more severe. And it rises to nearly double when people separate. Yeah. But worse still, there's other research that shows that with kids, when the parents are separating, their diagnosable mental illness jumps to 40%. 40% of kids. And we've found in the research that when we do the child practice thing I'm talking about, and the mediation, it drops within a year to 20%. So then the other service, the other two services, are what's called contact centres, where kids, parents come along to change their kids over in the contact centre so that there won't be any violence or disruption, and it's like a border point. So the staff are actually on watch and waiting for violence or disruption or anger to happen to make sure that that doesn't happen. And then the other one, the last one I mentioned, that they've got 20 of parenting order programs are long-term, where the parents have been to court for 5 years now on and off. They're often, quite a lot of the people are well off, which is surprising. So I've been used with dealing more disadvantaged people in the last 30 years or so. And to see really wealthy people who basically, I guess, and there's a lot of good wealthy people. I'm relatively, not badly off. I'm a decent, wealthy person. Well, I wouldn't consider it wealthy, but, nice, comfortable middle class. But there's people also, doctors, lawyers, Qantas pilots, and the like, who, truly, honestly, the way they were using their kids to get back at the other person who's hurt them was just woeful. So that's where we're working at the moment. And when you read about that last 6A, which is like in Swedenborg times, marriage as it is today. Now that was a 300 odd years ago. I'm not sure what it's going to be like today, but I'd imagine. I don't know. It'd be really interesting to know how much that's changed. But the good thing is we do get good results. Like the law of thirds as well, there's about a third of separation where what we use is a drawing of a bridge and the two parents and the kids. And if the two parents get on well and the bridge is relatively solid, there's research that shows kids actually do better after separation than kids when they haven't separated. Because if people are also staying together and it's total acrimony and friction, that also affects kids. So sometimes when parents separated, the bridge is strong, and the relationship, like with Bruce Willis and Demi Moore, where he learned to get on with Anton Kutcher, and he worked with his kids, and his kids are okay, and they'd go on holidays together. And I read an article where they asked Bruce Willis, how did you get through it? He said, What do you call the actor? Will Smith is a friend of his, and Will said to him, for the first 6 months of this, you're going to be in hell. I'll be with you. I'll help you. Then after another 6 months, you're going to start to feel better. And if you can get through a year mark, you'll start to feel it's okay, but do it for the kids. And in the interview, Bruce Willis says, the reason I think it worked is because Demi and I did it for the kids. We want them to be okay. And that's what we try and do in our work now, and the people that work in these services around the country try and do. As well as I'm lucky, I get to do couples therapy before it happens, to try and stop it happening, and family therapy. But the people who are going through the separation, you know, if they didn't have that support, it would be even worse. So at least the support's there to try and ameliorate and reduce the acrimony, the anger, the hurt. Most of it's really hurt. I mean, the anger is all hurt. People hurt each other. And there's a woman who's Shirley Glass, who was a couples counselor in America and was quite well known. And in her one of her pieces of writing, she's estimating that, you know, 80% of men in some form are adulterous they do infidelity. And more often than not today, that may not be physical infidelity, that can be emotional infidelity. And that can be, you know, internet, emotional stuff, connected. And she says only about 18% of women are in infidelity, which is quite a stark difference, isn't it? And she works with that, and I've worked with couples where that's happened and helped the couple stay together, and it's not easy, you know. And sometimes it's too much. And as what I've realized in 30 odd years of working with couples is that it can be a year or two before there's at least enough solidity when infidelity happens for the marriage to stay together in a more relatively stable form again. But it's changed and it doesn't go away. It's like grief. It changes over time, but it doesn't go away.
Can I ask you, how do you explain emotional infidelity? A little more.
It might be something where, and see, the difference between men and women in this is interesting. You know, when I worked in Veterans Affairs, I saw just mostly couples. I saw one guy come in, I said, how's the intimacy in your relationship? He said, we do lots of sex. I said, I think I can see the problem already here. It's interesting how, and Shirley Glass talks about this too, men see infidelity more physically. They see, we're going to be in trouble if we have sex with another woman. Mm-hmm. Women are more like, did you love her? And women I'm experiencing in couples therapy over 30 years are more concerned, not with the sexual act per se, but that you loved her or cared for her. Or, like for example, you were on the internet emailing her about how much you loved her while I was in there crying with the baby or something. And those sort of things I'm finding have a stronger impact for women than men. And because men and women have to need to try and understand that about each other. And have to understand all the differences between them. But I don't like the men are Mars, Venus thing, but there's also a lot in that. And Swedenborg sees that too very clearly. In a very deeper way, a spiritual way. Any more questions before I move to the next bit? What I'm painting a picture of, because obviously there's 50% of marriages staying together. We hope there some of them are okay. And there's people who remarry and they're happy. And they don't break up. You know? And you don't have to hear me in this, just watch TV. You know, watch all the stuff on telly and all the movies, you know? There's a lovely movie about a boy. It's called About a Boy with Hugh Grant, where this boy doesn't want his mum to be alone, so he connects with Hugh Grant to get Hugh Grant to be with his mother. It's lovely, because he wants a dad. And after a while, it's a whole family. So people's configuration of how they are together today is certainly more fluid. But it's more challenging in the fluidity. With freedom comes cost, you know? So first of all, before I say any more and say some more of the good stuff, how does that strike you? Did you know that that was the relationship field at the moment in our country?
But I don't know how they get the help. I know they can go to the government for mediation.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, dealing with things after that, where do they go?
Yeah. If they're lucky, they get to a parenting order program.
Well, they've got agreement.
And we'll work with them for a couple of years.
Verbal agreement between them, this is my daughter. But she gets dissatisfied because the different things the husband would do and come out of the house and go in her house when she's not there, and because the lad will leave his kid with him or something. And, you know, there's little annoying things, and he'll take them away for holidays and she doesn't get to see them even now to talk to them on the phone, but he just takes them. She's got them, he's popping in all the time and seeing them.
Well, we work with all the time.
So who do they see about
that? Us.
What is... I have to get the information.
And most of the services are religious bodies. The only one that's not religious is Relationships Australia. I worked for 5 years. But the Catholic Church has Santa Care, United Church is Unifamily United Care Community, Anglicare, Spiritus.
So she has to contact Anglicare.
Interrelate. Yeah, no, well, we're in the phone book. There's a whole lot of us. Couples and Family Therapy Services.
Couples and Family Therapy Services.
You can Google all this stuff.
They haven't officially got their separation official.
Yes.
They've been separated for 18 months.
Yeah.
And they haven't got a divorce.
Yeah.
And it's just all sort of verbal, and I just think this is, a bit messy. Yeah.
Before marriage, do you do
Catholic Church in particular funds itself. We were funded previously to do it, and the government's now said no, pay for that yourself, because we've got to deal with all this crisis separation stuff. The Catholic Church goes, well, we will, because they've got the money. So we do a thing called FOCUS, pre-marriage education. If you want to get married in a Catholic church, you come and find out about what's marriage, why you're doing it, all that sort of thing. My boss, who's director for Southeast Queensland, is an educator. She says, you know, it's a shame that we're putting... And they can understandably, if all these marriages have fallen apart and you need to look after the kids, understand you're going to work with that. But if you could stop that, if you can do early intervention, educate people about what marriage is. Most people nowadays get all the marriage magazines. And they talk about marriage. You know, I have people say, you go to a marriage, people go, there's no bad for my first husband type of thing. It's like a reality TV show type mentality about marriage is another thing that we do, you know. That's, and because so few people now, I think it was last year I read the Australian, they did the big research on spiritual and religion, where about, you know, 80% of people are spiritually, religiously interested in these areas of life. And only about 12% of people are going to any type of church. And any real growth church is where people are going to a sort of 6-month recycling one of fundamentalist, like Hillsong and places like that, where a lot of people go into it, but 6 months down the track they're also leaving. So there's a recycling process. So without a substantial religious thing for people, where it really means those sort of community religious connecting supports for people in marriage. Or God. In 1930, when my dad was born and he was illegitimate, the illegitimacy rate was 3-4%. Today it's about 67%. So a lot of people are even choosing not to get married. They live together and have kids. And I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is we haven't got, like what you're alluding to, enough of the free stuff still. Anyway, it's the state we're in. Anyone else want to make comments on that before I say something?
It's just interesting that at our age, you know, being 40, just over 40, that we have friends that are just slightly older getting into their second marriage.
Oops,
and we have friends now that are divorcing and separating. and you can see them go through struggles and think, and the basis where what's keeping Sally up again is a united focus, a united spiritual platform and ideals, and marriage is very much a part of that, and that marriage is not just an agreement or a legal contract to stay together, it's something very real that underpins that. So that's for us, we'll be, I think, lucky having teachings that we do, because it does fill it in so beautifully. Otherwise, when you get through the troughs, it is very difficult to see your way up when you're in a deep valley to actually work on it. You do need help from the outside. We've been very blessed.
A lot of people don't go and get help when there's trouble starting up.
From a work perspective, the part of I work for and the background that I've come from is that child support is over $1.5 billion in funds being transferred from one parent to another in child support.
So Jenny just sees it very well.
It's massive.
Bruce Gilbert Steele came to me when I was in Wollongong about 6-7 years ago, because I knew the people there, and he said, "We want you to look to take in our EAP program." I saw how many people it was too many. I said, "No, that's too big for us. Yeah, that's a whole new service." But I asked him, "What's your main referrals? Or what are the main things people come for employee assistance?" And he said, 50% is that they're struggling in their relationship. And another 17% is having problems with their kids, 67-odd%. And Blue Scope's still, big in Florida. So that also gives us some ways. And I see there's major struggles for people out here in the world.
Yeah, very, very, very.
You know? So I'm not trying to press you guys. I didn't know how much you'd know about this, but...
No, I hadn't even remembered what you said.
I can email David this stuff, and you can send it out.
Yes, because I'd like to get something from
David. For sure.
She went to a marriage guidance, and they said, look, let's have this divorcing.
For sure.
I mean, they're supposed to be helping, but they couldn't do anything.
Well, it's a difficult... See, therapeutically... Most therapists are trained to deal with individuals. Our special field deals with couples.
That's what you have to do.
And a family. It's totally different therapy work. And it's the same spiritually. Nearly the only religion I know that deals with the spiritual development, basically at the end of the day, and this is what I didn't really get enough time to go to yesterday, but spiritual development is about the couple. Not an individual. And it doesn't really become clear in Swedenborg's writings until conjugal love. That the identity, that from a distance, the two are one. And other religions, like most psychologies and therapies, are still dealing with people individually. So, therapies that work with couples and families, particularly with couples, if they also can be informed by a spirituality that knows about that, you're then working with a very deep, I think, psychotherapy and spiritual supportive process for people. So ever think to yourself, do you know any other religion that talks about spiritual development? Well, I mean, the Catholic Church, really supports all the, people. But if you look at the writing about you doing bad or doing good, it's about the individual,
Sufi religion supports couples.
Sufi supports couples, but it's still, when it writes about it, still the dominant change is around the individual. Swedenborg is around the couple first. And that's a different kettle of fish. When you counsel an individual, they want to tell you their story. And they don't tell you about what's happening right here and now. It takes you a long time to bring it to here and now. A couple go immediately to here and now because they're in the room together. It's inescapable. So when I teach therapists couples therapy, I say you've got to be ready for being immediately present. Not hearing the story. As soon as you say something, they go, really? Bang! And they're at it. And they do this couple thing. Now, the chapter that Jenny and I wrote on couples therapy, starts out with a Swedenborg quote. I've got to get it in somewhere. Yeah. Which says that to know something's knowledge, to live its understanding, to know something's knowledge, to understand its intelligence, to live its wisdom. And we walk that through the book about that's how we work with couples. And everything that's in it's based on what's in conjugal love for men. And some of the conceptualization that Swedenborg presents about the couple as a oneness. Gestalt therapy also luckily accepts that. Remember I talked to you yesterday about the a self is a system of contacts? A self is a contact. You don't feel who you are until you make contact with someone else, like you experience looking at the other person. In a couple, that is happening so frequently that we have to work with the two individuals, but then the self, and this is how we name it in Gestalt therapy, the self of the couple. And the way the metaphor I use to explain that, the therapist says, it's like the two people, I used to use the term the dance, they're both dancing together. But now I use the term of you're dealing with two people in a boat. As soon as one moves, the other one moves, just that the boat's invisible. And when you step in as the therapist, you move the boat too. And when they move you, and you're all affected. You know? So you're helping them be in the boat without tossing one out. And let's hope it's not you as a therapist, and that happens as well. That sort of conceptualization starts to allow people to see that people that aren't trained that way just try in couples therapy to deal with each person separately. But the real energy is between the two. And when you see that with couples, it's initially looking invisible, but as therapists you make it visible. Couples get it straight away. When I worked in Veterans Affairs, I had a lovely big office with a settee and a whole lot of chairs. And if the couples came in and they would sit in separate chairs, I'd suggest to them, what would it be like if you both sat in the settee? Why not? It's not where we are. So when you're ready to sit in the settee, let me know. We'll work towards it. Because people need sensual imagery and experiences to connect with what's invisible. A lot of the work of a therapist is making the invisible visible. Yeah. Is this making sense? Yeah. The other thing I do with couples is I do the green-red thing. I had one couple come to see me, and I'll change it around a bit, but it was the time of War of the Roses. And she had him, they were quite well off, they're on their farm, and she had him out on the caravan, and she was in the beautiful big house on the farm. And at night time, because they're out in the middle of nowhere, in the night time, when he got to come out to try and go into the house to go to the toilet, she'd switch out the outside light. And I did laugh, I thought this was terrible. And it was like War of the Roses, you know, it was all this sort of fighting. But I said to them, I said, look, it's like what you're doing all the time between you. Every communication is red. It's hot. It hurts. It's nasty. It's critical. I said, what I want you to try for 60 seconds is do green stuff. Green stuff will be loving, nourishing, nice stuff. They couldn't do it. And I started to realize, this is about 30 years ago, I started to realize, I said to them, it's like you guys are addicted to the red. And the red's like revenge. You hurt me. I don't want to be nice to you. I want to protect myself. I want to hurt you back. And that's a strong thing for couples. The other thing that helps, that I learned from working in domestic violence, is to use the notion of a traffic light. Because one of the guys who I worked with in the group in domestic violence, I said, what do you think would fix it? He said, well, it's like we've got this, like we go from green to red with a traffic light without a yellow in the middle for we can get ready to stop. It's like we need a yellow light. I said, well, I'm going to write that down and use it in an article I write. He said, you can have it, mate. I'll actually credit them in the article. But when I say that to couples, because when couples start fighting, they start blaming, it's what we call a shame cycle. And often couples will do that because rather than ask for what I need, like I want you to hear me and not get heard, it's safer to say, why do you never listen to me? And then that shames the other person. They turn around and they'll say something shaming back rather than saying, I want you to accept me as I am. They'll say, well, you never listened to me either. And all these sort of, once that shame cycle starts in a couple, it just keeps going. It has a life of its own. So we stop it. And we get people to be aware of it. And couples get it instantly when you're working with them. And if couples are arguing, and for example, maybe the husband's getting annoyed first, and she's not, she'll say, you're getting red. Now say, let's make it instead of you being red, because I'm working with Swedenborg as the couple, as the main entity, right? The couple's the real self here. I say, let's make it that we are getting red, and let's stop. And couples love that. It's like salve on their wounds. No one's being blamed. It's the couple that's moved to that direction, not the individuals. One couple I work with, were both smokers. They bought red and green lighters. And if they thought they were going, use the red lighter and go, let's do green. And see, really, then you're not fixing it. You're just giving them stuff to help them conceptualize their coupleness.
Well, so, if they fight, at least they're communicating. There's some people that don't fight at all. They don't fight. They don't like each other.
Yeah, but if you only did that, if that was your only communication and it hurt you, that's going to get worse and worse.
There's two types of fighting.
Yeah. That's right. Now, there's two types of fighting when they argue, but there's the worst still sometimes when people go quiet.
The silence, yeah.
The silent thing, too. You know? So, I mean, who teaches couples about this stuff or gives them the metaphors or the language or sees them as a self? Do you know? And yet couples, when they've been there a long time, they feel that. They know they're a self. It's almost like they read each other's minds. Do you know? And when couples, where one of them dies and I work with the other person, the first thing I ask them is, have you had any contact yet? And that sort of lets them feel a bit freer to go yes or no. And they mostly will say yes, but I didn't want to tell people that think I was crazy. Or they'll go no, but I'm dying to get it. I'm waiting for it. And couples, when one of the partners have died, have a variety of ways in which they experience the other person from the spirit world in some form. And I, like Van Dusen said, don't judge that. That's their experience. One old lady who was 82 told me about, he bought me this lovely little Santa doll, little Santa Claus thing, and 3 days after, the thing started walking. I went, are you here? But I switched it off. And then she said later in the afternoon, I said to me, snooze, and started off again. I said, Fred, come on, I got it, you're here, it's all right. And I'd work with one woman, young woman, whose fiancé had died. And 5 years later, in this group therapy training, she was talking about, I have to get over that. I go, why? If you still love him, you know, he's around. You know? And I looked at her and I said, he's with you right now, isn't he? And she thought, no, I'm not meant to have that. She said, how did you know? I said, I can feel it and see it. And she started crying. I said, wait a minute, who's telling you can't have him around you? Oh, my parents, they said 5 years, forget him. I said, haven't they watched Titanic? The lady waited 60 years. And then she dies on the ship and he's back with her together in the world of spirit. And the whole group cried. There's people, the trainees were sitting there going, this is better than the movies. I love this. This is great. And so this is the good stuff I'm moving towards. These separations and marriages can be healed. And for me, Swedenborg's been extraordinary helpful in that. I mean, Jenny and I have had to work at that, and a lot of the time she's told me the secrets that's in Swedenborg that it's not meant to know. And then when I ask women about that, they go, I can feel it. And it's like they have a different... Well, look, they start doing all these little looks, you know. Like men aren't meant to know it as much as women do. Because, you know, women, scientifically, they've got two parts of the brain, left brain, right brain. They're joined by a corpus callosum. And that corpus callosum lets the two brains talk to each other. And believe it or not, guess who's got the biggest corpus callosum? Women. 20% on average bigger than men. So they're sort of firing all this stuff off to each other that we're not getting. I remember Julian once when I visited him and you were up here visiting the grandkids. He said to me, Brian, see the washing machine gone? I said, yeah. He said, I've got to stop and think when it stops to change and put it in the dryer. Ruth just does it. And if you work with women like I do, you see the differences. But it's not always good. Women can be more, in my experience, more emotionally poof than men. Men don't know how to take that. You know? Men learn if you get like that with each other, you hit each other. So we don't. We get very safe with each other. But women, for the goodness of the man, might come at him. And what men, what do you do when women come at you for your own good and they're trying to nag you to do something that you know you need to do? What do? There's a man of wisdom. But how do you feel when that happens? What happens as that happens? Yeah, well, come on, what happens?
Yes, dear.
What?
Yes, dear.
Yes, dear. Yeah, yeah. Anyone else?
Well, you get a lot of resistance. A real strong resistance comes up.
Yes. And then if you even work out that women, romantic as they are, you know, my experience is too, men can be a lot more romantic than women.
I think they are.
Yeah, men, they what?
I think men are more romantic than women.
Men, wouldn't you like roses? Yeah, it would be better if you changed the dishwasher. That would show me you care. And then, but the thing is with women, you can't empty the dishwasher. You go, look, and she goes, you didn't do that properly. Well, you know what I mean? Am I right? So a lot of the men train is by training men how to stay with that. When I was in Veterans Affairs, I worked with this guy who was, we're a lot of SAS people. And we had a thing in our thing where we had to tell them, don't tell us about your war crimes in your council. You have to keep that separate. Anyway, this one couple I worked with, cut it short. At the end I said, what helped you? And she said, a whole lot of good things. But he said, well, watching you with her. I said, what do you mean? He said, you're able to handle her anger. I thought, he can do it, I'm going to learn to do it. Frequently what I do to men in couples therapy is say, watch, you see what she just said? Watch this. Now go, ba 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 ba, you feel this, that and the other. And she goes, that's exactly right, Brian. I said, how did I know that and you don't? And she goes, you've got to learn this, mate. You've got to learn to... And it's really like another... The therapist is like a corpus callosum between the male and the female. So eventually the connections are strong enough to keep it going, even if they're separated. In fact, in some ways, once they're separated, that's requiring even bigger, stronger, muscular corpus callosum for the kids. Because you're also having to hold, usually, I still love you and hate you because you hurt me, but for the kids, we're going to do this. And the question, one of the questions I use, which I enjoy, with, you see couples come in too, and they're all doing, you know, they're doing their stuff very quickly. If you don't have to take a lot, any couple, it only takes a second to have them in their bulk doing stuff, you know. And particularly when they start doing stuff, whether it's a big icy wall or the flamethrowers or whatever else they're doing, I ask this question often. And someone else had told this to me, Dal remains, that was Patrick, I think. I say to them, so what was it like when you first met? Who flirted with who? Who did the look with you? Well, that's what about you two. What was it like when you first met? Who chased who? She was doing it there non-verbally, did you see it? Yeah. She loves it. Look, can you see that? Isn't that beautiful? Now, when couples are fighting and that happens, and I go, but look, and they go, oh yeah, that was before. Blah, 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 blah. I go, no, stop, it isn't before. I just saw it. Because they want to believe that doesn't exist. And it does. And part of my role is to go, I just saw it. You can deny it. And they go, they look at me and they go, yeah, we know. But, and then they go, I said, yes, we can do all that red stuff. but there's hope here. And that's why they come back. Often for a year or two sometimes. Particularly couples have been for a very long time and the marriage goes cold. But they're still together. Or if they're separated, they still in one way want to get together. If you find that spark, the marriage is salvageable. Whereas if you see a couple after 20, 30 years being together with the kids, and you don't find that spark, this is maybe not going to work. And maybe this is hard work. Does that make sense? Now, what's that going to do with Swedenborg? Well, we started with the 5 and 6 levels of marriage, where it looks really like what I've just described to you today, basically. But the things that I found inspiring, and actually you'll like this, this is another lovely correspondence. Because I had the book for a while, I found this photograph of Jenny on her honeymoon that I realized I was using a bookmark.
Very nice.
I'm really glad I've got that. Well, the other thing I did too, I've got a nice big picture of her and I'm at desk, so I'm doing couples therapy. I say to them, if you tell me you don't fight, I'm going to be very annoyed because her and I do. And we've wrote a book, international book, the chapter on couples therapy. And we're both therapists, so they'll laugh, they love it. And because they do, couples, how can you not fight and be a couple? It'll be in all different ways, tiny ways, big ways, cold ways, slow ways. But it's about you. Just like with regeneration, dealing with the temptations within yourself and externally, it's you dealing with that with you, with the two of you. Do you know what I mean? And that's part of the growth, those struggles, if you stay with her. That's part of the change. And when couples see that, they get hope. And one of the things I say to couples is things like, marriage is like the weather. Where would you like to live? Tasmania. Well, where do you want to live? Noosa. Well, you better work and find a place in somewhere in between the two. Or I say to people, marriage is like eating stuff for breakfast. I said, what do you eat for breakfast? Porridge. What do you eat? Toast. If you try and make the other person eat what you want to eat for breakfast, that's not going to work. And yet that's what couples do. They want to be like each other.
They want the other one to be like
you. You want them to be like, well, you should be eating this. And one couple come in, I said to them, you know, if you look around the room, what paintings or statues or whatever else remind you of relationship? And she goes, this beautiful pop art one with all the beautiful rivers and colors. He goes, that's terrible. It's chaotic. I hate that. He said, I love this one with the desert. She said, that's typical. That's you. And I said, you're making a mistake here, folks. You're trying to make each other eat the same breakfast. These are your paintings. Go out and find the painting that is your relationship. And they did. They went to the galleries in Cameron and did all this. And they came back a few weeks later. And they said, we found it. I said, where? They said, it's in our hallway in the farmhouse as soon as you walk in. We both love it. I said, there you go. That's your painting. That's your marriage. They had one couple come in and really love it. And because there is a lot of humor in couples, too, even though all the pain. And sometimes I take a risk and go to that. But they said, we're in a really bad place. I said, what's happened? And they said, within about 4 weeks, her mother has died. And my father's died. And then her best friend got killed. And then our aunt has got a really bad illness that's terminal. And our daughter's getting married. And I couldn't help it. I tried to keep a straight face. But what? But I said to them, so you've had 4 funerals in a wedding. And they burst out laughing. They said, we didn't think we should be laughing, but we feel that too. We feel there's some sort of likeness in this. It's like crazy, but it's like. You never know how couples are going to respond, you know, as a therapist. What I love, though, is Swedenborg's contact with them. I mean, that one in the golden age, where she's seeing women through his eyes. How can he do and feel anything bad? Because she's in there going, no way, buddy. You know, it's like instant internet. It's like the two computers are combined in Wi-Fi, and they really are one, even though they're separate. What a wonderful experience. Not only have we discover we're the Lord's the more we're ourselves, it's we discover ourselves the more we're the couple. Isn't that beautiful? You know? How many men would let their wives look through their eyes and how they look at other beautiful women? Oh, look, he's getting the look. Look, he's getting the look. Do you know what I mean? And that's part of the difficulty in the sensual age that we live in, is that's challenging. But I can tell you it happens anyway and it's doable. When we look to our wives are already doing it. The Swedenborg says they just have to touch us and they start to read us. So if your partner's touching you at the moment, or you're touching, it doesn't matter. They're doing a bit of reading off you, man. But I love the bit where Swedenborg goes and talks to the three couples together, and he gets to talk to the women. I really love that bit. And the both bits happens twice. And the first time they tell him these secrets about that's back in that ducky one. Jump, I don't like that. I'll go to the very last one. Remember, they got the dove on the window and all those things, and the husbands say that there's nothing hidden from them, and they touch us and they know how we're feeling and all these things. That was really nice. I really like the last one, and I'll sort of finish on this. And it's where he goes in, and he says to them, and they say, "Just today, the dove came and spread its wings, so we guessed you would be coming." And asking to reveal one more secret about the love in marriage. And Swedenborg says, "Well, why do you say one? I came to get many. I love it." And that's really good. And then they say, "Well, because there's secrets." It's pretty obvious, isn't it? Because there's secrets. He says, "And some so far beyond your wisdom that your intellect can't grasp them." Why are women laughing at that? Look, well, that's what they're saying. And then they say, "You pride yourself over us for your wisdom, but we don't pride ourselves over you for ours. And yet ours goes out far beyond yours, because it enters your inclinations and feelings. It sees them, notices them, and feels them. You know absolutely nothing about the inclinations and feelings of your love, and yet they are what your intellect thinks from and follows, so it's due to them and according to them that you are wise. And yet wives know them so well in their husbands that they see them in their faces and hear them from the sounds of speech in their mouth." And that's what Gestalt therapists learn to do. Not to hear the story, but to see the change instantly. Hear the voice difference instantly. And not understand what it is, just see it and mention it. So Gestalt therapists, if they're really good, are a little bit like angels. But maybe not. They also be like devils while they're in this world, don't they? So, and we feel them on their chests, arms, and cheeks. Makes you think, when you read this, it makes you think differently again about when your wife touches you. You go, "What's she doing?" You know? But from a zeal of love for your happiness, and ours at the same time, well, let's be both ways, we pretend we don't know them. I love it! I love it when women start saying these things, all comes out. Anyway, so. And yet we manage them so skillfully that whatever our husbands are like and pleasing and want, we comply with it, permitting and submitting. We bend them only when they'll bend, but never force them. And he goes, "Well, where do you get these wisdoms, you know?" And they answer, "It's built into us from creation, and therefore from birth. A husband thinks it's like instinct, but we think it comes from divine providence, so that man's wives can provide them happiness." And I love it then at the end. They tell him a few things more, and, you know, but then they say, what he says, "When I heard those things, it sounded as if the dove was mourning." And the wife said, "This is a signal to tell us we crave to divulge deeper secrets which weren't allowed to. Because you might tell men what you heard." And I just think this is so hilarious. Swedenborg goes, "I intend to. I'm going to." And they go, and after they talk amongst themselves, they go, "Oh, well, tell them the secrets you like. The power of wives to persuade is no secret to us. They'll tell their husbands, that man's playing games. Swedenborg, these are just stories. He's cracking typical male jokes. You know, don't believe him. Believe us. You know, we know your loves and all the rest. And then they say, and anyway, tell them about it if you want to. But husbands still won't rely on your mouth, but on the mouth of their wives, which kisses them. I love that. That's the end of the chapter. The women surely are not that tricky. What?
They are.
But for men, it's good. I see couples there who see women almost most of the time, because these are stereotypes. And that's a stereotype. There's also women in the book that are not that way, and men in the book that don't end up that way. Don't want to go to that yet. But in 30 years of couples therapy, what I see in general is the women check me out to see if I'm looking after the relationship. Men check me out to see if I'm looking after them. And that's a very clear difference for me as a therapist. But this stuff has been invaluable in writing about and doing therapy all those years ago. So thank you, Lord, and Swedenborg, but in particular, thank you, the wives, for talking about and put in. So that's where we finish. We have a cup of tea. Any final questions or comments?
I can see this seems to be all one direction. The women know what the men are thinking. The women will bend the men so much but never break them. But I'm not hearing the other direction about how much the men understand the women or try and change the woman or bend or whatever. I'm only ever hearing one direction. Is that because I can only hear one direction or is not the other direction given?
Well, yeah, go on, Glenn. Yeah.
There's a saying that bounces around that, happy wife, happy life. And I think there's a sense in which the only thing the man needs to know is that if he's faithful and he accepts that his wife really does care for him, that's what he needs to know, and you know, blessings will follow. And you can't have two people managing the relationship. I think the man learns if he listens to his wife, does the things that she is telling him as what he needs to do, that it's going to play out good in the end, and that's really the lesson he needs to know.
So if you take that to an extreme, because that's the words that come easy, is that the woman controls the relationship.
Yeah, and that's true, but that's because we're taking this to our separate naturalist sensuous reality where we're all separate. If we see this as really, this is a oneness of work.
Yes,
at the end of the day, Swedenborg says, you know, love and wisdom are great, but at the end of the day,
Lord who controls.
It's now not saying it's a man or a woman. It's not a gender thing. And it's not saying that men can't love. But it's saying if we're going to do a coupling of a oneness, and I've worked with a lot of gay and lesbian couples, and one starts being more husbandly and one more wifely in both ways. And in fact, if you watch Modern Family, that's what they play with all the time, about which of the two guys is the woman in the relationship. But so these are, and other philosophies will talk about this as you know, these are like, and Swedenborg does too, these are spiritual realities too. You know, our Lord in the church. It all flows up and down in this. So I've seen a lot of time where I believe the woman should listen to the man, or the man's feeling more. If we did in that separate reality, there's a difference. But when we see them in the oneness reality, that's what I look at. That's the difference. That makes sense.
I mean, I know my experience. Graham's just, the wisdom is just there, and he'll just suddenly cut through and earth me, and that sort of thing. So the two directions are happening to create the one, but in everything that you're reading to us, it only ever seems to be the one
One of the things with men is that this is a generalisation, but they can isolate themselves in their own intellect, and the pride, you know, is the big thing. And what a marriage does is, at some point, the man has to come out of that kind of self-absorption and begin to actually live for the marriage, the family, you know, and so it draws the male out. And the reason the emphasis, I feel, is on the woman is because in terms of the internal processes, it's our will that leads anyway. Yeah, it's our affections. And so on a more internal application, what is feminine are those affections, you know, that are able to love the wisdom of the man, which is exactly what you're talking about there. But if that man is not willing to be loved, what you get, you don't get a marriage.
We've been led to this in the writing slowly, you know, and this is the first time Swedenborg puts his name on something. It's one where we start to see him being a bit more fallible. And it's really just a balancing process. There's all the saying that that we love the man's wisdom, etc., etc. It's about the happiness of both of us. And if we take it to the natural and essential too much and do it in our separate identities, it starts to fall apart. Do you know what I mean? Because these are now heavenly, spiritual, quantum level type experiences. But when I work with couples, I still see it. I don't name it in that way. I wouldn't need to give couples any of that. It gives me the lens to work with that. And if it's real and it happens, that's all. I don't need to prove it. You know, and if it's not, I don't push it at people. You know, there are times when there's no love here. And Swinburne says, like, an overly controlling wife will break this. You know? But what we're seeing in here, too, is we're getting the male wisdom. I mean, this is an amazing statement. This is letting us know this is the male wisdom of the world, but there's a female wisdom that's different.
And it's the wisdom, you know, like, it's not loving how bright the guy is.
That's right.
It's loving what he is living.
And what he's like, and his principles. Now, I've seen what's important to women is that the man has principles, lives by the principles, and honesty, and cares for the kids, and the stuff that makes for a good community, you know? Women make an enormous amount of mistakes too, don't get me wrong, you know? You do, don't you? You know? Hugh Jackman comes in the room, what do you do? Do you know what I mean? What happens? Come on, seriously, ladies. Hugh Jackman comes in, looks a lot like me. And stands here and goes, good day, ladies. What happens? Go on. Like in McConnell, look at it. So, I'm not saying. I think, as they even say, there's still more secrets to be revealed. Do you know? And that's good.
How does the man get out of the head, though, and into the heart? Where the woman,
For most men with great difficulty.
Like, often I can't connect with him even if I touch, because he's very much processing.
For most men with great difficulty.
In his head and in his heart.
He
can't read my mind when he touches.
But I can't. Yeah.
That's what you think.
It's way.
If you look at the field of psychotherapy, in all the training centres in the country, we had the only centre in the 25, 30 odd years of all the ones, we checked this out at a conference, where for 1 year we had more men in the intake group than women. For 1 year. It was 7-5. We always took 12 in. Once, ever. Sometimes we'd only have just women want to learn calcium therapy. But what I noticed that was different is that I've learned through Jenny to be in a gestalt way present with people in a way that's heartfelt and is able to see quickly and not do my head and be present. My intellect allows me to explain that to women, because for them it happens in a more cloudy way, a felt way.
Yeah, okay.
They can do it well with their husbands.
I
want
to be present with
your
kids.
Yeah, but I can do things as a man to get me to that felt level that I can then explain to women if they're working with someone that they're not connected to, that isn't their partner. You know, a guy whose wife is suicided and she's going, how do I connect with him? He's annoying me. I go, here's what you do. You can either go here, here, or here in these spaces with feeling this about him. And she goes, oh, that's good. And I thought to myself, why am I telling her that when she's a woman? And I thought, it's because I've also got a brain, an intellect that does that better than women do. So when you bring those two together, look at our Lord.
I mean,
if you look at the potency of the divinity, male and female combined, it's wonderful. Anyway, look, I don't know if all this has helped or not. I hope you've
caused any
wars.
So the awareness is what they need.
The what?
The awareness.
What?
Men.
Men need awareness. More like what I'm hearing what David said. Men like to be, we like to be in charge of stuff. You know, we do. What?
But you're not really.
So it's hard for us to realize that. And accept that you're doing it for the right reason and let you get an audience about it. You know? The amount of domestic violence is terrible. It's men trying to control women. They don't have to.
How much of that is cultural? Cultural
expectation. Cultural, well, in Australia today is quite high. In the Australian culture. You know? And women can play to that too. You know, I don't know how to fix the tie. Can you fix it for me, women?
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, because Max, I'll finish with this about what you just said. As Maxwell Smart once said, chief, if only they would use their genius for goodness instead of badness. So when you start using your talents for badness instead of goodness, that gets into trouble too. And women can do that as well. Mm-hmm. Can they not?
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Does that equal the field for you? There we are. Thanks a lot. I'm calling